Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Bob Chapman. Delighted to have Bob back. He's a longtime market professional for over 40 years. He's written numerous articles, analysis of business, finance, economics, politics. Bob gets into insider information that you do not see in too many other places, and he covers some things I don't usually spot anywhere. He is the owner and the editor of the International Forecaster, and he calls it a compendium of information on business, finance, economics, and social and political issues worldwide. He also speaks and holds workshops at business conferences around the world, and he's regularly heard and seen on, oh, my goodness, so many radio and TV programs, including being a regular on this one now. It's always great to have Bob back. Bob, I welcome you, and I want to throw a couple of things on the table and get you to comment on them. And I know you've got a lot on your mind that you want to talk about. But first, a welcome. Welcome back, Bob.
Well, thank you very much. It's very, very nice to be here.
On a very chilly Chicago morning, I must say I'm trying to warm up. I'm sure this program will warm me up. But let me just throw a couple of things out. I love to follow, we mentioned this last time, I love to follow David Rosenberg's daily commentaries. Once in a while he has a big one. Today he's got a special report, he calls it a quote-unquote V-shaped recovery, V standing for valuation. And he says that his opening comment is that by some measures the S&P 500 is already trading at valuation levels that would ordinarily be consistent with an economic expansion that is 5 years old, as opposed to a recovery that, at best, is only beginning. One more thing. I don't know what's going on all over the world, but I know a few central banks are beginning to raise interest rates. Well, of course, there's not a hint of it here, but the Bank of Israel raised their rates, I believe, a quarter point. A Bank of Australia raised their interest rates. I think there are some hints that India may do it, possibly Korea may do it. What do you make of all this, Rosenberg's remarks and the fact that we're seeing some interest rate hikes around the world?
I don't think there is yet a significant, you might call them spotty, and I think they're among nations where they would like to keep down their inflation rates, and higher interest rates will contribute to doing that. The United States and Great Britain and Europe, generally speaking, are in a different situation. Even China is, because China manipulates their currency big time in order to outdo their opponents competitively in exporting goods all over the world. But these could become, these three increases could become precursors of things to come. But I think they're quite a ways down the road. I think they may be premature. They may stay at the levels that they're at for a year or two or three, but it's only a guess. I think that those countries are trying to tell other G20 countries that, hey, look, we did what you people talked about at the meeting in Pittsburgh, and so are you going to do that as well? And Europe, the United States, and Great Britain can't do it. They have to keep rates down indefinitely, and that means the dollar and other currencies are probably going to continue under pressure to the downside.
Oh, it is really going down. Your forecast on that seems right on the money. But let's take a break, Bob. We'll come right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To the News Hour, on with Bob Chapman, talking about the economy. Bob, let me throw another Rosenberg gem on the table. Oh, boy, is this one ever a gem. He first says that since the March S&P lows, the S&P now stands at a 27.6 multiple trailing earnings, I believe he said. And his killer statement is, he says, well, I will not belabor the point. And that's based on operating earnings, the 27.6. He says, when all the write-downs are included, the trailing PE on reported earnings, as opposed to operating, in other words, before they take out everything they don't want to call an expense and rig the numbers to look better than they really are, the trailing PE on reported earnings just widened to its highest levels in recorded history of nearly 140 times. And get this, which is three times the levels prevailing during the height of the tech bubble. Now, if that isn't a killer statement, I don't know what is.
Well, it just shows you the manipulation that is going on by the United States government and has been since August of 1988. And the working group in financial markets has to be abolished. We cannot have what are supposed to be free markets when we don't have free markets. I mean, we have evidence now through the Freedom of Information Act that the Fed and the Treasury were rigging the gold market back in the late 1960s. And we do know that they can legally do it under the Working Group for Financial Markets.
The Plunge Protection Team, Bob.
Right, Plunge Protection Team. They've even recruited Barrick Gold to engage in their gold suppression since 1988. So this has got to come to an end. But that's why the S&P is 140 times reported earnings, 27.6 times trailing earnings, and goodness knows, really, what's on their balance sheets, because they're marking to model, not marking to market. When you mark to market, you mark to what a recent sale in something similar has been made. Mark to model is you mark it to fantasy, whatever you want it to be, which means the books, particularly for financial corporations, but all American corporations, their reporting of operating profits and eventually earnings are all one big lie. So those figures are far, far worse than he's even presented. And David is a wonderful economist, and he left Merrill Lynch because he said the market was going down. They didn't like that. And that's what happens to people who speak out, and that's why economists and analysts are wrong in their predictions two-thirds of the time, because they can't tell people the truth. If they do, they'll lose their jobs.
And I think the worst forecasting record, or they were challenged for the worst, Bob, is the forecasting record of the Fed. I mean, they have, God knows, teams of how many economists. I mean, they can analyze whatever they want to, upside down, backwards, forwards, whatever. And when the Fed makes a, you know, we don't know what they talk about internally. I mean, they may talk about something completely different internally, but the stuff they put out for the public, and they come out with a statement that, well, you know, everything is fine, it's stabilized, we're heading in the right direction again. it would probably be a good bet to put your money on exactly the opposite of what they're saying.
Well, that's correct, and as I often say, they couldn't identify the truth if it jumped up and bit them on the nose. They lie about everything, and it's not only the Fed, it's government, it's Wall Street, it's banking, insurance, transnational corporations. They're all liars. It's disgusting, and it's socially and politically acceptable. Everybody knows that everything is a lie, so they figure out, well, you know, how do we work ourselves around this lie? And it's unbelievable.
Well, it really is, Bob, and it's pretty disgusting. And of course, they get the megaphone of the major media, especially the business channels, to go along with them. But you get reports on the non-business ones as well. So CNN and I don't watch the broadcasts. Maybe the CBSs and the NBCs and the BBCs and the rest will put out reports about evidence that the economy has bottomed out and stabilized and beginning to recover. Well, how does it recover when there are hundreds of thousands of jobs lost each month? And if the numbers were calculated accurately, instead of the way the Labor Department rigs them with this phony model that they use, a supposed birth-death ratio, I mean, you just assume that because maybe more people are born than die, then presto, so many new jobs are created, or the fact that the small business creation, I don't know how there can be small business creation during a time when I would suspect many are going out of business, but they automatically assume so many hundreds of thousands of jobs or whatever are created by some model that they come up with. And it doesn't matter whether we're in good times or bad times. These jobs are presto automatically being created. So the real numbers of job losses have to be considerably higher than this number they put out to the public, which still the last time around, before revisions, was about 265,000. When they revised it, it might go to 365,000. Who knows? But the revised number never gets any prominence when they put it out.
Well, we're calling U6 unemployment at 21.3%. And John Williams is calling it a 21.4. The government admits to 17%. But the problem is we've extracted the birth-death ratio. And so the figures are really much higher. And they're going to get higher, not precipitously so over the next 9 months. They'll go higher, but slightly. We'll probably see 22% by the end of the year. It'll probably stagnate for about 6 or 8 months. And unless there's another stimulus package of about $2 trillion, it's going to start rising again. And I don't know what form a new stimulus package would take, but the president, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner, if you can believe that,
extended
the war in Afghanistan into Pakistan, and they're going to bring in 500,000 troops and mercenaries. I mean, the whole thing goes beyond reality, but yesterday I heard interviews in Detroit where they were giving out forms to 65,000 people who wanted free money. So I guess our president's going to go running around to the major cities in the country and just give money out to people. It's incredible.
It really is incredible, Bob. And I absolutely wanted to make a comment about Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize. I would rate it the worst choice since Henry Kissinger got it. It really shows what the Nobel Committee is all about. It has nothing to do with peace. I mean,
they're all Illuminists. And the Nobel fortune was made on explosives.
Exactly.
They invented dynamite.
Exactly.
And of course, they've been in the arms trade for many, many years. So, you know, Peace Prize, and here they are shoving weapons and explosives out the back door. I mean, give me a break.
It's pretty outrageous. Obama is taking a bad situation in Afghanistan. He's already made it worse. Just the man he appointed to be the commander there, Stanley McChrystal. Stanley McChrystal is a thuggish killer. Came up through special forces, and his expertise is in death squad activities. I mean, this guy is going around. You know, I mean, you can do it on the ground. He's doing a lot of it through the air. There's even talk, and I believe it, that This group of eight U.S. forces that were killed in a border outpost, minor post, that these posts are supposedly in border positions to watch for infiltration across the border. But the other side of the story is that, my God, the border is so big, you can infiltrate any place you want, I would imagine. And these people live in this country. They know this country. They can traverse the mountains much better than an outsider coming in. They probably couldn't do it at all. And the ugly rumor is that these troops weren't put there to police the border, but to be killed as a reason, as a pretext for McChrystal to be able to go back to the Pentagon, to Obama, and say, we simply don't have enough forces. You have to send me more. So we're letting. I think this is a very, very good possibility. This is true. We're letting these guys be lambs to the slaughter, so we can send more troops over, so they will be lambs to the slaughter. And I believe the more we send, the more troops will be killed, and of course the more Afghans will be killed as well. And in the end, it'll turn out like Vietnam. We can't win this thing. I think the people with a brain absolutely know that. But they just keep this thing going and going and going. Even the good ones, Bob. I heard Russ Feingold, a brief interview. Sometimes he says things that make sense. He kind of came a little way over to the right side of Afghanistan. But overall, he was pretty pathetic. He doesn't want to end this thing. He just wants a timetable for winding it down. What's a timetable mean? A year from now? 3 years from now? 5 years from now? The timetable is now. We need to get out, and we need to get out right now. And we need to do the same in Iraq, but of course that won't happen. That's off the economy, Bob, and we have to take another break. But a lot of it is we're pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into this stuff. We're getting nothing for it, and everything is up in flames at home. Let's continue when we come back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm with Bob Chapman. Let's get back on the economy, Bob. All your thoughts, most important, what's foremost on your mind. Give a little more information on your insight on what the way things look now, the way you can see them unfolding in the fairly near term. Pretty tough to look too far in the future. I think if we look, in one respect, it's easier if we look far enough out, because we're really heading for maybe the granddaddy of all train wrecks. But think about, say, the intermediate term, and what do you see?
Well, I think that the economy will probably get slightly better or go sideways, and that will continue to occur through the summer of next year, with the second half of the stimulus being spent. The word from Washington, I just heard a tape from Congressman Nunez from Central California on a program I do out of Modesto, and he said that most of the money for the stimulus package that has been spent is not being spent on infrastructure. Infrastructure is about 10%. The other 90% is going to pay off congressmen. I mean, this is incredible, a congressman saying this, to buy votes. And but be as it may, next year, the economy toward the end of the year is going to start to get wobbly again, and it's and interest rates are not going up during that time frame, and the dollar is going down, and the dollar will be testing 71.18 before the end of the year, and maybe before the end of the month, and next year it'll break that level. And probably the following year, it'll probably fall back down to around 40. And that's when I expect devaluation officially, as well as default on debt. And I think that will be done multilaterally among all countries at some meeting, and such as the Smithsonian in the 70s and the Plaza Accord in 85. And where all currencies are revalued and devalued against each other, and there would be a debt settlement. My guess is two-thirds would be written off, and one-third would have to be paid back to debtors. And that would be country to country. And at the same time, I think they'll try to bring into being the currencies of the group of 20 into an index And I think there will be gold in the index, but in order to be effective, it'll have to be 15% or more, which means those nations who have no gold in the G20 will have to go out and buy gold, which is bullish for the gold story. And so I also believe in the short term, gold will go to 1250 here, could go as high as 1700. And if it doesn't do it now, it'll do it early next year. And then later next year, I would expect that it may, around this time next year, take a run at 2,500, maybe even 3,000. And so we're looking at some very dynamic moves in gold and silver. Commodities should continue to go up after a small correction. The dollar will be down. Growth in the United States during the coming year might be plus 1%. First quarter was minus 6.4%. And that's the best they can do with $800 billion worth of stimulus. Now, if they had $2 trillion, maybe they could even show 2 or 3 or 4% growth. I don't know. But the point is, it hasn't been very successful. And the reason why, it was spread out over a period of time, and it was political. And they really ruined the program because the stimulus that was given to the public directly, and that started in May, and really that money had been mostly spent by July at the worst, August. And some of these other minor programs have snapped in, but we still got half to spend, and it's going to be next year and maybe later. And so they're going to come back for money, and Congress is going to give it to them. And that will extend us out another year, but it also, with what the Fed is doing in monetizing debt, it's going to give us some pretty hefty inflation, which has really already begun, but people don't see it yet because they're not economists. And next year we should see inflation officially back up in the 4 or 5% area, and the following year, we could very well see it back up officially over 10%. And, of course, real inflation would probably be around 20%. And so that's what I see coming.
And a lot of it is because the dollar is getting hammered so much. If our dollars are buying less goods and services, that's one definition of inflation. And, I mean, you've got the dollar just literally going in the tank completely, and it certainly is on a downward trajectory right now. Here's another big thing I'll throw out, Bob. We'll take a break shortly. I'd like your comments on this when we come back. But there's a lot of rumblings about the Arab oil producers getting off the dollar and selling oil in other currencies, maybe a basket of currencies. And I think the rumor is that they're very upset that they see the dollar declining. I think, like you, they see this continuing, and it's costing them a lot of money. So they want to make a move, apparently, and change things. I guess that has to be extremely bearish for the dollar. But let's take a break and come back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hour. I'm with Bob Chapman. Bob, what do you make of the Arab oil producers very upset, very possibly planning to go off the dollar?
Well, first of all, the journalist Fisk, that was a deliberate leak. The leak was decided, I think, by the G20, G7. I think they want to put the thought for the future in the minds of people that there are those who are pushing very hard to have the dollar no longer the world's reserve currency. Now, as soon as the announcement came out that China, Russia, the Arab Gulf states, we'll call them, Brazil, China, Japan, had been secretly having meetings, they did. They had those meetings. And they all lied about it, but which is just not unusual. They lie about everything. It's a trial balloon. Otherwise, he wouldn't have released it, Fisk. And what are they looking for here? They're looking to get rid of the dollar in international trade. And I think what they will do is the IMF says, well, we're going to use SDRs. And that I don't think is going to last very long. I think it's an intermediate step. The SDR is the special drawing right. It's a fiat currency. There's nothing behind it. It's just as bad as all the other currencies, which are all fiat, with the exception of the euro, which has about 7% gold backing. And so that's not going to work. So what they're going to do, I think, is go to a basket of 20 current currencies weighted against each other. And I hope that there's a gold component of 15% because it, or higher, but probably 15%. And if that is included, then those who don't have gold, like the United States, will have to go out and buy it in order to qualify to be in this unit, this trade unit. I think this will happen about a year and a half from now, maybe sooner, but probably a year and a half to 2 years from now. And it will be accompanied by those devaluations and debt defaults that I talked about earlier. And the next step for the internationalist is a one world currency. And that's what they will be after next.
That's
what takes your sovereignty away from you.
That's way off the future,
international,
Bob. A one world currency is certainly not in the near term future. That's a pretty distant event.
Well, it's at least 5 or more years. And the public of the world are not going to give up their sovereignty to these people. And if they try to shove it down people's throats all over the world, they'll have world revolution. And that may happen simultaneously anyway, because at the same time, there should be ravaging inflation going on all over the world a year and a half to 2 years from now. And gold will be at considerably higher prices, somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000 an ounce. And silver will maybe be $100 an ounce. And that will be a reflection of the inflation, the fear of the value of currencies, represented in a flight to quality. The gold is the only currency in the world that owes nobody anything. And it's been that way for centuries. And so that is the evolutionary process that we are entering into. And when you are in a worldwide unstable situation and were it to turn deflationary, I mean, all heck would like break loose. And you'd have revolution all over the place. And these people who have deliberately caused this in the first place, these international bankers, members of the Illuminati, I wouldn't give 2 cents for their lives, because what's going to happen is everything's going to blow sky high. And so we're headed towards very, very difficult times. And if you think now is bad, this is child's play. We're just getting warmed up. And so out over the next 5 years, you're going to see asset depreciation continue worldwide. That would be anything, factories, commercial, residential, real estate, your own business, the value of your business, everything's going to go down 60 to 95% in value. The only thing that's going to retain its value is gold and silver, coins, bullion, and shares. And that is the only place to be for investments. The markets are going to go down. I mean, you just gave the figures that David gave. David's probably one of the 5 best economists in the world today. Get thrown out of his job because he tells the truth. Maybe he should come on the air with me. He'd have a lot of fun.
Oh, he indeed will. I'd like to get you both on at the same time, but I do prefer one guest at a time.
Yeah, I do too. But anyway, I highly recommend you get a hold of him. And he's really terrific.
I sent an email to his company once. It came to him. I got an answer from somebody else. I asked a question. And I suggested that he address it more fully in some of his daily commentaries. And my point is that money and credit is contracting at a rate comparable to the early 1930s. And at the same time, we've got stock prices just soaring to the moon, and consumer credit is contracting very sharply, and still big job losses are being incurred. How in the devil do you get, I mean, I'll ask you, Bob, how in the devil do you get any kind of a recovery with this kind of stuff going on? I mean, this is big-time trouble.
It defies sanity.
Indeed.
It is just beyond the pale. It is beyond belief. It's incredible. And they expect the professionals of this world to believe that, never mind the public. You know, it's just like the boy who cried wolf. They're going to cry wolf, and the wolf's going to be there, and nobody's going to come. And I think the people, and I truly believe this, this is not some spatial thinking, the people like you and I and Alex and John Stadmiller, and who have been on the airwaves year after year, and who have been writing year after year, and now we have the Internet. All of these people have contributed to making the Illuminati terrified. They are terrified, and they are on the run. And they've made a mess of this thing. There's probably this last administration in Washington really sunk them. At least that's according to particularly Brzezinski. And I think that it's on the way, and they can't control it. And they're going to lose. But everybody's going to pay a great price. You know, mm-hmm. Just like the Fed saying, well, you know, if you investigate the Fed or you try to do away with it, we'll bring the system down. And my answer is, hey, the system's coming down anyway. And we know that. So bring it on. And you know why? Because you people control almost all the wealth in the world, and you're going to lose it. We're going to arrange to have it taken away from you.
Oh, indeed, Bob. But I wanted to mention one other person. I wonder whether you get any of his reports. Richard Salenti, who runs the Trends Research Institute. You mentioned some possibility of some pretty disruptive things happening, violence, whatever. He absolutely sees things deteriorating very badly, and it will result in great violence when people, including here in the U.S., will be so severely impacted by the economic devastation that's hitting them that they literally will feel, I mean, they'll lose their jobs, they'll lose their homes, they'll lose their savings. They will really be, whatever they've been working for will be wiped out. They'll have nothing to lose, and they will let it all hang out by reacting violently in the streets. And I think he's thinking of, you know, not just a few thousand people here or there, but mass uprisings that may be beyond the control of the government to handle. I mean, we could be talking about a revolution at some point. I have no idea. Well, nobody can foretell, you know, whether this in fact will happen, let alone when it could happen. But it's certainly, these things have happened historically in other places. Because we had our own revolution here, not because of economic troubles, well, because the British were exploiting us back in the over a couple of hundred years ago. So we had our own revolution of sort. But this would be different. This would be something that never happened in this country before. And it's very possible that things could get so bad that this is the way people will react. They're fed up with a government that absolutely has betrayed them, and the only solution is to get rid of this government.
Well, I agree with Gerald, and it's going to happen all over the world. At least 50% of the countries in the world will be in revolution simply because they're getting all these broadcasts. They're getting my publication. They know what's going on, and they're spreading the word worldwide. And this is what's so terrifying to the Illuminists. And, yes, it's going to be that way. And, yes, what's going to happen is that the U.S. government is going to try to bring mercenaries into the United States, probably a quarter to a half a million of them, to so-called bring law and order to our country. And I can promise them, if they're listening, if they come, they're not going home. Because what the American people will do is they will go and help our military to stop these mercenaries. And I'll be the first one to volunteer, I'll tell you. And that's where the secret is. We're going to have a coup in the United States government. These people have to be all brought to trial for treason and hung, and all of their assets given to the United States government to pay off all the people that we know from the money that was stolen from us.
It has been stolen from us, there's no question. And another economist I get on the program regularly, Bob, Jack Rasmus, he teaches out in California. He has written, and he's got a new book coming out on this, documenting well over $1 trillion in wealth transfer from ordinary people to the very elite at the top. And this has been going on year after year for many years. I forget the precise title of his book. It should be out before too long. And, I mean, they do it in very clever ways. You know, raising the payroll tax and Social Security back in the 80s when Greenspan did this. He earned his bona fides and then became Fed chairman. And by hiking taxes on the little people or giving our money to Wall Street bandits, all kinds of ways they have of stealing public wealth and getting it to the elite forces on the top. And if they drain one area dry, I guess they haven't drained this country dry yet, but they could go around the world. Iceland has been very severely attacked, and whether Iceland will go along with what they want, I don't know. But if they do, and they literally drain all the wealth out of Iceland, they'll simply dump the Hulk and go on to another host and drain it dry. I mean, like a vampire draining its host.
That's right.
And moving on to another host, and just keep draining them all, and they can keep this sick game going for a very long time. There's only one answer, as you say. It's up to people just not being willing to take this anymore and taking it upon ourselves to stop it. Because if we don't stop it, these bandits at the top and their government co-conspirators, they're just going to keep doing it. There's no question about it. I write about this stuff, and of course you do.
Well, you're absolutely correct, and everything is working in that direction, and it all depends on the combination of events, but we can't get deluded, and we can't get broken apart. We can't get continually sucked into the left-right paradigm, the political paradigm. We have to go beyond that. We have to look beyond that. We have to look at the survival of our country and our civilization. And the civilizations throughout the entire world that are all different than ours, but they certainly deserve to continue the way that they want to. What's good for America and Europe and Canada is not good for Colombia or Laos. And so that's the line that we have to take. We have to be fair with everybody. We have to get rid of all our prejudices, and goodness knows Americans, particularly very prejudiced people. And there's a reason for that, the evolution of people coming into our country from all over the world. And each group had to earn their bones, so to speak, in each migration wave that came from everywhere. And it's presented America with a population that really has a warrior tradition, a very, very strong one. And I think when we reach that climatic point where the action is going to take place, God help the people who get in their way, because they're not taking any prisoners. I mean, they send 500,000 mercenaries to America. They are not going to leave. They're going to be planted here. Americans will not tolerate that. And so Mr. Salenti's right, and Jerome Corsi's right, and you and I are right. That's the way this thing is headed. And we do have a chance, a remote one, of getting H.R. 1207 passed, kick kicking half those people in Washington out who are getting paid off on every issue. It's got to stop. And it's up to the American people to do it. But if they don't do it, and we can't make that headway, revolution is the only answer.
Bob, I'm not sure the number 1207 is auditing the Fed.
Yes.
Oh, boy, would that be a revelation? Of course, the Fed is fighting tooth and nail to see it doesn't happen. A lot of co-signers, I think about 300 in the House, but I would guess the Senate is the big obstacle.
Right, and I think that they have to be overwhelmed, and it's up to your listeners to contact every senator and tell them this co-sponsor, SB 604, that we need our country back. And if you don't, we're not going to vote for you. We're going to campaign against you because this is the most important issue in our country since the Civil War. And if we don't get it right, half the population of the world is going to die.
Oh, it's astonishing how potentially bad things could be. As you say, Bob, it does not have to be this way, but we are very definitely on track, unless it can be reversed, toward a really apocalyptic situation, potentially. It's like the fuse is lit, and who the devil is watching this thing burn down and not lifting a finger to do something to stop it? We have to stop it, or heaven help us. And I feel especially for the young people, I can't imagine what they have to look forward to. One more break, Bob, and then we'll come back. I'll let you finish up with some final comments.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, final segment with Bob Chapman. This is such important stuff, Bob. We're literally talking about something that I think people who don't think about a lot of affairs of state can really put their finger on, because if you're talking about economics and finance, you're talking about jobs, you're talking about savings and welfare and taking care of your families. And if things are really deteriorating, even if at the moment maybe not the way it was months back, over the horizon, potentially there's some awfully, awfully dangerous stuff, dark clouds looming. So I don't know how anybody cannot just be focusing on this like a laser. So your information is extremely vital. Some final thoughts that you can pass on, Bob. By the way, I just shot you an email. You can take a peek at it when we get off the air to get you back on again in November. But some final thoughts, Bob.
Well, I think immediately we're going to go sideways here. The only thing that I see changing is I think finally people are going to start listening to David Rubenstein and John Williams and myself and others. And they're going to come to the conclusion that the market is really way, way, way over extended, and that they're going to have a correction in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I don't envision lower interest rates for at least a year, if not longer, and probably longer, probably two or 2.5 years into the future, maybe as many as three. Now, I know we just saw a couple of countries say that they were going to up their interest rates, but I think that's going to be isolated, and I don't think it's going to be followed. If interest rates are raised and the creation of money and credit is cut back upon, then what comes next is a even more slowing world economy, and particularly domestic economies, depending upon who's increasing money and credit and who isn't. And so a diminution of expansion of money and credit and an increase in interest rates will absolutely destroy what is left of the economy in the world. They're in a box and they can't get out. And sooner or later, they're going to run out of money and credit and stimulus packages and clunker packages, and the whole thing's going to collapse. And I think that's going to happen about the same time the dollar collapses further downward, and that gold and silver finally passes 3,000 and is headed for 6. And then finally, the people of the world who don't know what's going on, who are not listening, or who are listening and not paying attention, they're going to come to the realization that they are really in serious, serious trouble.
Oh, they will be in serious trouble. Very sadly, I think we both know that most people don't realize it until it's already happened, and they are really in a dire situation. Now what do we do? Now what do we do? Instead of anticipating a little bit, watching things deteriorate badly, and doing something proactively, well, it's tough for ordinary people. They don't follow stuff the way you do, Bob, and even what I do in these programs and my writing. But I stay on this all the time, and it scares me. I think the best way I could sum it up is to say it really scares me to see what's happening. And I mean, anything can break any time, and probably the time most likely might be when we least expect it to happen.
Well, that's usually happens.
Oh, that's the way
we publish.
Oh yeah, everything expected, people are braced for it, but it's the unexpected that could be the tsunami storm. Bob, we're out of time. I wish we could go on. It was another terrific hour. Take a peek at my email. I shot you a couple of dates for next month. So I will say to be continued, and my great thanks, Bob, again for coming on.
Well, thank you, and I'll see you in a month. Bye-bye.
Oh, indeed. And join us again next week. We've got a full slate for you. Of course, every week, live programming every day. Join us then.